From the Alex Trebek stage at Sony Pictures Studios, this is Inside Jeopardy!
Oh yes, there he is, Johnny Gilbert, fresh from the Grammys, where he played anonymously as backing for several artists. Mm-hmm. Sarah, I'm sure, bringing us in to another episode of Inside Jeopardy, your exclusive and official podcast destination for all things happening in the world of Jeopardy. I'm Michael Davies, joined today by producer Sarah Foss.
Hello, Michael. Happy to be in the pod with you.
Talking of Johnny Gilbert, by the way, this week, our friend producer Barry Jean, who works with us at Embassy Row and over at Sony and is all around everything we do, she showed me a tape of an old game show called Camouflage, mm-hmm. hosted by a certain Johnny Gilbert, a very young Johnny Gilbert. And I marveled watching Johnny's work without his guitar, hosting that interesting game show. I believe that was the 1960s.
Yeah, well, as we know, Johnny has quite a storied career. Many shows in his past, some that he hosted, some that he announced for. There was even, you know, the Johnny Gilbert show he had back in the day. So we're just lucky to still have him with us, the voice of Jeopardy. And not only does he bring us into every show, but he brings us into every podcast. I don't know if you know, but now Buzzy gives you credit for the bongo playing, so I got to come up with an instrument that I'm contributing. Who knows?
I don't believe there are bongos in that theme, so I'm playing imaginary bongos in some way. So lots going on in the world of Jeopardy. We are recovering in JPT, Jeopardy production time, from the high school reunion tournament, which was fantastic. We can't wait for you to see that. We are preparing for Jeopardy Masters. Every time we talk about it, we had a big management meeting this morning. I get more and more excited about Jeopardy Masters. Of course, we're making more and more episodes in the Alex Trebek stage. And starting to think about Jeopardy, March 30th, this will be Jeopardy's 59th birthday, having been
so good for 59
in 1964. Looks very good for 59. And starting to think about potentially a live Inside Jeopardy. Anybody who listens to Michael Davies as Davo on the Men in Blazers pod knows that I like doing live stage appearances. And we're starting to think about maybe doing that for Inside Jeopardy. Stay tuned. More information coming. And then planning everything, really, it's amazingly starting to think a lot about next season, which will be season 40 in syndication going into Jeopardy's 60th year. I mean, quite amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's fun to be planning. It's hard to believe that this season is kind of coming to an end, if you will. February 20th, you mentioned that high school reunion tournament. That's when Mayim Bialik is going to be back as host for the first time in syndication to host that with us. Then we'll have some Ken Jennings time. Then we'll be back to some Mayim time. But things are plugging along, both in JPT and JAT. A quick turnaround we had for the high school reunion tournament. You know, we're taping shows that aren't going to air until end of April. But that was one that we taped in late January and had to turn around very quickly, thanks to our great post-production team. But yeah, so excited for everyone to be able to see that.
We're also starting to talk about Celebrity Jeopardy. No official news on its return, but the finale performed superbly on ABC. Later in Inside Jeopardy today, we're going to be sharing my conversation with Celebrity Jeopardy champion and friend of this podcast, Ike Barinholtz. It was wonderful catching up with him. He was legitimately so excited to win, so excited to watch it with his friends and neighbors and family. And we checked in with him to see how he has been enjoying his new Jeopardy fame as champion.
Ah, yes. And just a teeny tiny spoiler, you might or might not have invited him to a certain upcoming Jeopardy event. Stay tuned for that.
Yes, our listeners will certainly want to stick around for that. We also have some great games to discuss. But first, I thought we could kick off the show by sharing some of the responses to my EP question the last time I was on this podcast about the proper way to book an audience for Jeopardy Masters without giving away, without risking giving away what happens on the Alex Trebek stage.
Yeah, the first of many EP questions right here on Inside Jeopardy.
Yeah, it's partly because I have a lot of questions, or rather, I'm tired of only the answers of my own senior management, the voices of conservatism and restraint.
Ah, yes.
But now I'm getting the restraint of the entire audience. Okay, here are a few of the suggestions we received. This is from Jim. The suggestion I have is to invite Jeopardy alumni to be in the audience. Previous, current, and upcoming Jeopardy contestants. They know how important it is not to spoil the outcomes of their appearance on the show, so that would eliminate the main concern you have about someone in the studio audience leaking spoilers on the results of the tournament. And now, that is something which we've already been thinking about. We also, we should say, are going to have a slightly different standard. We're going to tape Jeopardy Masters in two blocks. We're going to take the first 5 hours in one block and then the second 5 hours in another. Obviously, we're more concerned about the second 5 hours, which are really going to give away who wins. So we may be a little bit more liberal early on. From Drew, leading up to Jeopardy Masters, engage the entire Jeopardy community, including fans, former contestants, and even media, in a massive J misinformation campaign. Oh, I love this. Ask right everyone to post fake results and fake studio audience stories from the event. Ultimately, no one will know for sure if any spoiler is real or fake. Sarah will attest, I have discussed this on many occasions with our social and digital team. I'm a big Churchill fan, big Churchillian. There is a wonderful campaign of misinformation to convince the Germans that the Allied invasion that would be in the Pas-de-Calais rather than Normandy, and I've studied that a lot. So I feel that we could have a lot of misinformation. We could almost have everybody with the trophy, everybody winning in every possible combination. So yes, I love the campaign of misinformation. Cameron, I was thinking there could be a way for top Jeopardy fans to submit a few paragraphs / an essay saying why they want to be in the audience in addition to having them sign an NDA upon arrival. Shows like SNL have done the essay approach and it has helped them in filling their audience with fans who want to make the most out of their experience. Wow, I love that idea. An essay to get into the Jeopardy audience. What do you think about that, Sarah Foss?
I think it seems fitting. I love that.
It would maybe have to be in the form of an answer. I don't know how we would do that, but
yes,
I like that.
This longtime fan of Jeopardy deserves a spot in the front row of Masters because they have been watching since Art Fleming.
Very good. From Martin, Davo, about having a full audience without any leaks. Do you remember the time you filmed Millionaire the night before airing? Yeah, like that. Yes, I do remember. You know, when we launched Millionaire, Sarah, I think I've told you this a few times.
Well, you always do tell me anything's possible because you've done that. So I do know that.
Yeah, this
part.
Is every time our wonderful people in post tell me that they're not sure they can make a deadline, I remind them that at the beginning, certainly the first two series of Millionaire, we would tape the show the evening before because I wanted a post-work crowd in New York City. And then we would cut the shows overnight and they would air the next day when we would be immediately making another episode that we would post overnight. Now, the flaw in that plan is that I literally did not go to sleep for 2.5 weeks the first time we made the show because I was both making it and posting it. And if you could see pictures of me, there are some pictures floating around of me at the end of that because I went to a wedding the Saturday after and there were a lot of pictures of me taken at that point. I was a mess by the end of that. This was a younger Davo who used to do this.
I wasn't going to say that, Michael. I was not going to say that, but
this was a 33-year-old me rather than a 56-year-old me. And Jeopardy is complex. It's complex post job. I'm not saying that Millionaire wasn't complex too, but I don't know we're going to do that. But we could solve all of this if we did Jeopardy Masters live, and that is still my intention. That terrifies most people who work on Jeopardy, present company very much included. From Steve, howdy, Michael, Sarah, and Buzzy. We'll say hi to Buzzy for you. I'm a two-time champ from season 37 who had my episodes taped during the peak of the pandemic with no studio audience. I wish that my wife and friends could have been there to see me on the Alex Trebek stage. My idea for the Jeopardy Master studio audience conundrum, very good point, it is a conundrum, is to invite former players and their guests who, through no fault of their own, didn't get the chance to have the studio audience experience. That's another great idea, Sarah. We need to enact that. That's really good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for these suggestions. I'm in love with this segment of the show where I get to ask questions and you get to answer them. And in that regard, I would love to throw out another EP question, an EP conundrum, I think we should call this. This is very game show. I love that. This sort of goes back to Camouflage, the show hosted by Johnny Gilbert in the 1960s. But this is another conundrum that I've been thinking a lot about lately. And, you know, this has been something that's been brought up to me since I started on the show, pointed out to me by some peer producers and some people who work at Jeopardy. And it's something that I read a post last week on Reddit all about. And it's about whether or not in the era of 69 HD 4K, even though we don't shoot in 4K, but 69 HD television, whether or not we should be putting the categories on the screen when our clues appear. Because very often we don't cut back to the wide shot of the board when players select. We don't have the time. The game is moving so fast. And clues pop out. People select them very fast. They often don't say the whole name of the category. They'll often just say a dollar value as they're going down a board. And a clue pops out. And even I, who sees the material before the show, even I, who has a grid in front of me, I get lost in terms of what category we are in sometimes when we're playing the game. And I know that's part of for the advanced Jeopardy viewer. They have to remember the categories, remember where they are, and try and, you know, figure out where they are in the show. But the entire Jeopardy post on Reddit, and the responses were fascinating, was about whether or not we should find some screen real estate and whether we should put the category up on the screen every time a clue pops out. So this is my conundrum. I suppose my question is, what do you all think about that? Sarah, while they are thinking and writing, why don't you give me your opinion?
Well, I think we've discussed, I think it's good for text clues, but when we have videos, images, clips, that I think it would take away from that experience. So it would just be really important that our hosts reiterate the category maybe before each of those clues. But, you know, it happens to us, like you said, we have the script in front of us, and sometimes someone will give a response and we'll quickly be like, wait, we should accept that, forgetting that the category has to do with a specific, you know, number of letters in a word or an adjective or those types of things. So I understand the concern from those at home. And like you said, the screens are bigger. We've got more real estate. You know, we've changed the dimensions of how many characters we can put on one screen at a time. So
we're going to take a look at it. So we're having our team sort of dummy up what it would look like. And we'll do that first of all in stills. Then we'll do it in post.
Nothing we do is dummying up, Michael. I just want to say,
exactly.
This is Jeopardy. We will have a mock version for you, but in no way will we dummy anything up for you.
Was that an English expression? I'm sorry. And so we will then, I suppose, maybe look at perhaps testing it in an individual tournament. That's something which I'm interested in doing, is giving things a real run out there in the real world for the audience to be able to see them for a little bit. But I'm very interested to know what you think about it. On the Reddit post, most of the responses were in the positive. Most people were saying, yeah, this would be a good idea. I'd love to see it. There were a few dissenters, but I'd love to hear your opinion about that.
Yeah. And as we know, people at home and in the studio, they are scanning that clue so much quicker than either of our hosts is reading it. So to add information wouldn't take away from them already being able to respond, I think. So anyway, very happy to hear Michael's question. Excited to hear your responses. But now let's get into the games. Cue the beep boops. All right, we kicked off another exciting week with Matthew Marcus going for his third win against Tanya Parrott and Jesse Lampert. In the Jeopardy round, it was close. All three players going into double Jeopardy, just within $1,000 of each other. Of course, loved the month that start with Feb category. Gotta love an SNL reference.
Yeah, Matthew Marcus, a fascinating player on Jeopardy. Clearly British of background. Tall, imposing, great look, facial hair, long, almost jet black hair. on one of the group chats I participate in, mostly with my male friends, the photograph of Matthew Marcus was sent out basically with the accusation that this was me in disguise playing on Jeopardy, which my friends had a great deal of fun with.
Well, Matthew was able to take that small lead heading into final. All three were correct, and Matthew did wager enough to cover Tanya, so he lives another day, returning on Tuesday, going up against Carolyn Shivers and Greg Snyder. This was a great Jeopardy round. We love to see this, Michael. A perfect round from all three players. 30 clues, 30 correct responses.
Yeah, it is the most satisfying Jeopardy. Believe me, I also think that there is some nobility to a few stand and stares, because we need to challenge our contestants with the material, and occasionally stand and stares remind everyone how hard this game is. But yes, this was very satisfying gameplay.
Greg Snyder, probably going to be best remembered for his comments about Price is Right during the interview with Ken.
This is sort of becoming a media story as well. We've been contacted by a few media organizations to comment on this, and somebody making the point that, you know, Ken, along with contestants, slams Price is Right. There was no slam of Price is Right. I love Price is Right. I've attended in the audience, old friend of Drew Carey, still a lot of friends who work on that program. I respect that as an institution, as does everybody at Jeopardy. And I totally agreed with Ken's response. I thought he was being funny. All he said is, like, you know, we didn't just pull you out of the crowd today, Greg. You didn't just come in with a uniform or a funny sign, but that doesn't hurt. I thought everything was completely reasonable.
Exactly. I agree. And heading into Double Jeopardy, Matthew and Greg battling back and forth, racking up 9 and 10 correct responses respectively. And by targeting those high-value clues, Matthew was able to take a strong but not insurmountable lead heading into final. Now, before we get into final, we always want to address when people give us comments. You know, people are curious. We accepted Emrata for Emily Ratajkowski, and we want to explain that. We accept J-Lo. We accept JFK. We accept FDR. If someone is known publicly for another name, we're going to accept that. And oftentimes, Emily is Emrata in newspaper articles, on TMZ, you name it. That is a well-known name for her. So just wanted to sort that through before we wrap up in final. Matthew was correct. He goes on to win again. Greg probably had the best response. What is my lovely wife? So it was not the correct response, but as Ken said, maybe the most correct response up there, risking everything on your wife, but dropping you down to nothing.
Yeah, and four wins for my doppelganger, Matthew Marcus. And looking TOC bound based on the way everything's going in the season, we will see.
Yeah, so there we go. Into Wednesday, he's going for that all-important TOC guarantee. Do you like that, Michael? Fifth
yes.
Win against Becky Mulder and Dan Wohl. In the Jeopardy round, Matthew locates that daily double on the third clue, so he can only bet up to 1,000. Thank goodness he was incorrect. He's in the negative. He was able to climb out of the hole, but ended the Jeopardy round trailing Dan heading into Double Jeopardy. Now, another one of these clues I want to address. The category is, what is a calorie? The clue encompassing on all sides, like air temperature or some music. We were going for what is ambient. Initially, Becky responded with ambience, and we ruled her incorrectly. Then moments later, before the Daily Double, we did award her the $1,200 we had taken away and given her $1,200 additional dollars for a change of score in $2,400. And this is one of those moments people talk about. What happened at the judges' table? You know, in these clues, unless there's a very specific pin asking for a specific form of a word, like an adjective or a number of letters in a word we were just talking about, we will often accept it. And in this case, the writers initially, they just wanted to look and see if ambience could be applied to music. But they quickly determined that the clue was written broadly enough that it wasn't necessary to only accept one part of speech. So she was awarded the money. We always want to make sure we are doing everything as fair as we can. That's why we take a look at all of those things.
Sometimes I must say I'm very involved in these decisions. And sometimes I just enjoy listening in on the headset into the conversation, because I really do trust the process so much. And I think the thing I repeatedly ask is, what is the precedent? What is the Jeopardy precedent for dealing with this? And everybody seems to have right at their hands, like they remember show numbers and occurrences and names of contestants and specific clues of what we accepted and what we didn't accept. And so the process is fascinating to listen to, and potentially on a live version of Jeopardy in the future, we would be able to all tune in to that experience.
You would love that. Well, it was a tough Double Jeopardy round for Matthew. He attempted to get back into striking distance of Dan after that big Daily Double, but time ran out before the crucial 30th clue. Matthew was left just on the wrong side of the runaway. In this case, you know, people are wondering, why didn't you just play that last clue? Well, guess what? We had called less than a minute. And once that clock is counting down, we cannot alter or add to the amount of time remaining. It didn't end up mattering for Matthew. It was Dan's game to win. Also want to point out the lowercase clue, the E.E. Cummings clue. A lot of people just couldn't take it. It was like mind blown. Even Claire McNair, our friend, she had a funny tweet. Seeing a Jeopardy clue in lowercase has left me reeling. What is real? Who can we trust? And it's just so funny when we change just a tiny thing. Throws
yeah,
people.
It, I was just, I told you that there's a new Swedish version.
Yes.
Of Jeopardy that's just gone on the air in Sweden to great success. It's been very highly rated. I think the highest ratings on the channel it's on for years and years. But the one thing that's slightly dissonant to an American Jeopardy fan's eyes is that the clues are not in the same font.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes me out of the game to such an extent. We may need to lend them our font, or perhaps that font is known for something else in Sweden, which we can't predict. But yeah, it is disconcerting. But obviously, with E.E. Cummings, this was the only way to write that clue.
Yeah. So Matthew ends as a four-game champion. As you mentioned, Michael, very well, we could be seeing him again. I did have a chance to speak with him right after his streak ended. Let's have a listen. Matthew Marcus, four-day Jeopardy champion. How does that sound?
Sounds unbelievable, to be honest, but also brilliant. Yeah, it was an amazing experience, and wow.
What were your expectations coming into this experience?
Well, I came here to try and answer the age-old question of British people. Do they know anything? And if so, what do they know? And I was like, well, if the categories are super American, I'm straight out. So I was very pleased to be able to get through a few days. There's always going to be dicey facing someone who's also quick on the buzzer and also American, has the home turf advantage. But yeah, making 4 days is beyond my expectations. So yeah.
And I have to say, you did pretty well on your American history and literature. I wouldn't sell yourself short on that area.
I know a little bit, but I think my favorite answer was Yankee Stadium for a $200 question. It's like, I don't know.
With complete doubt, yes. I think the clue you're not going to ever live down is, who is Dorian Gray? You, the Oscar Wilde fan. How did you miss that one?
So it just said eponymous, and I was like, what's the name of a character in an Oscar Wilde? And I was like, oh, obviously the big one is Importance of Being Earnest. And I didn't really read the question.
Yes.
If I'd had, 10 more seconds, I'd be, hang on, that's not a character in Importance of Being Earnest, which obviously I know very well.
But, you know very well. If you were on your couch, you would have had it. But
yeah,
it's, things happen quickly here on Jeopardy. You know firsthand now just how fast the game moves. Talk about that.
Yeah, it moves at lightning pace, and you have to make strategic decisions at a really, really fast clip, which is hard. I mean, when Dan bet whatever it was, 10,000, and got a daily double, I was like, this is really bad. I have to change my strategy. I was trying very hard to at least catch up to him, get half his points total, but of course he got the final Jeopardy answer right.
Well, you earned over $114,000. Any plans for those earnings?
Yeah, well, that feels surreal. I've wanted to travel to various places for a long time. I've never got around to it. I've never been to any continents apart from North America and Europe. I could buy a house now. Finally, I could put a deposit down. I was like, can I afford it? So yeah, it could be a big life-changing thing.
Well, another life-changing thing could be the Tournament of Champions. With four wins and over $100,000, I'd say you're in pretty good position to get a spot. How does that feel?
I will certainly come back if invited. And then when faced with the really big fish, I'm sure I will be gobbled up in no time. But I will try to be entertaining.
Well, we look forward to hopefully seeing you back for the Tournament of Champions.
Thank you.
For an enjoyable and great run.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
All right, moving on to Thursday with our new champion, Dan Wohl, going up against Scott Perry and Mira Hayward. In the Jeopardy round, Dan misses that early $1,000 daily double. Mira ends with a small lead over Dan, and in double Jeopardy, they just battled back and forth, both scoring 9 correct responses. But in final, Mira's the only one who is correct. She gets a very exciting come-from-behind win, and she heads into Friday as our champion. Will she spend the weekend as a champion? Oh, yes, she will. She dominated in the Jeopardy round, 13 correct responses. This is a show where we featured the Super Bowl Heroes category. Of course, with last weekend's big game, we wanted to anticipate that coming up. I had the chance to shoot clues with the Fox NFL Sunday team. We headed out to SoFi, and, it's pregame at SoFi. It's so loud. I'm thinking, how are we ever going to play these clues? Because there's music, there's a mariachi band. So much was happening, but our post team made it possible. It was really fun to have all of them in the category and to highlight these great Super Bowl heroes. This was great because Mira's the only one who is correct in Final Jeopardy, earning her that second come-from-behind win. And then we found out after the game that she actually writes for the Noble Blood podcast, and she had just worked on a paper about the very subject that we featured in Final Jeopardy, which is the Holy Roman Emperor. So Very good for her. Coincidence nonetheless.
Whoa, Slumdog Millionaire-like. Wonderful.
So that's the week of the show. But hey, we have something very good coming up.
Yeah, this is my conversation now with our friend, Ike Barinholtz, Celebrity Jeopardy champion, friend of this podcast, friend of the program, and, you know, teasing it, future competitor in another form of Jeopardy.
Here we are, the great Ike Barinholtz on a screen in front of me. Let me just paint a picture. He's got a Jeopardy cap on. You're wearing the official merch.
Look at that. The trophy right behind me.
That's your trophy. Now, you did say originally to producer Sarah Foss that you were going to consider wearing the trophy around your neck.
I have been in contact with several jewelers today. We're trying to figure it out. There's a couple guys, got them in the bidding war. But hopefully the next time you see me, I will I'll be sporting it.
So as we are discussing your amazing win on Celebrity Jeopardy, this is the day after.
Yes.
This is the morning after. I just got the ratings in. You know, Ike Barinholtz and co. destroyed it in prime
time.
We were the number one show on all television. We did superbly. Tell me, how did you experience the actual episode? I know you experienced the episode in the Alex Trebek stage with us. We'll talk about that later. But how did you experience it on television?
Well, it was funny. You know, I for the first time in my life, I was actually able to keep my mouth shut. And I really told an insanely small amount of people about this. I told my immediate family and maybe one or two other people who needed to know. And so I was planning on kind of just watching it at home. And then one of my neighbors said to me, he goes, hey, you should have a viewing party. And I said, yeah, well, you know, and he goes, even if you didn't win. And so he kind of just threw it on me. And so we ended up having our neighbors over, and it was fantastic. I wouldn't have done it any other way. It was so great. They were all there. I think some of them had an idea. Like one of them said, if you would have lost and invited us over, that would have really been amazing. That would have really shown character. But we had
that would have been a real act of humanity. That would have been what a real big man would have lost and invited them over. How unreasonable of you to win it and still invite them
I'll
over.
I'll be honest, Michael, I don't think I have it in me. Had I lost, I think I would have said to people, I don't know when that's on. I did Celebrity Jeopardy, I forgot about it. No, but it was really great. We had my family over and the kids stayed up late. And we had all kinds of sweets and treats and couple drinks, and it was absolutely we watched Jeopardy at 7 and then Celebrity Jeopardy at 8.
Oh, wow. Perfect. So does it feel different today wearing the face of Ike Barinholtz? Are you getting a little bit of added respect? Do you feel it?
I do. Well, I'm getting so many texts from so many people that I haven't heard from in so long, and it just shows you, I think, the power of the show. The man who owns our favorite deli in Chicago texted my father to text me that he's proud of me. Manny's
Deli.
That's so
great.
This is just wonderful. So just all the love and the adulation is overwhelming. And it just, again, shows you how many people watch the show, how many people love the show, and just all different kids I went to kindergarten with, a guy I did an improv show with 25 years ago. Just they're everywhere. It's wild.
Well, look, let's start there. I want to go through the actual experience on the program again. I want to go through the future, which we're going to discuss a little bit, the Ike Barinholtz's future in the Jeopardy firm.
Hello.
But first of all, I want to go back to how you first experienced Jeopardy as a young Ike Barinholtz in Chicago. Tell us about that.
My parents were definitely trivia fans. I remember, I was very young, but I remember them having little Trivial Pursuit parties in 1986 with their friends sitting around sipping Bartles and James wine coolers. And then when Jeopardy was, I guess the first time I really remember it was probably like mid to late 80s. I know that I was already a fan of it when there was the wonderful episode of Cheers where Alex, where Cliff Clavin is on and of course does very well. And then in the end, he says, who are three people who have never been in my kitchen? So I remember knowing that. So I was probably 1989 or so. So yeah, mid to late 80s. And it was, pretty much every night. Sometimes it was on in the daytime, so my dad wouldn't be able to see it, but I would just try to watch it every day. It was just, I think I said on the show, I watched Alex go through three different mustache, no mustache phases throughout my life. So that's probably 30 years right there.
And so when did you become, or were you aware that you became a decent trivia player?
Well, when I was in high school, I went to a school in Chicago, Latin School of Chicago, and we, I think my sophomore or junior year, I signed up to be on Scholastic Bowl, which is like a quiz show, quiz bowl. And we had a really good team that year. I was not the MVP. I was probably, you know, fourth, fifth person on the bench. We had a couple stars, and we won the Illinois State Championship in 1994, I want to say. Wow. And then we went to the Nationals, went to Rice University and performed in the Nationals. And we think we came in maybe ninth or 10th in the nation. So I was doing it in high school. I loved it. And then when I lived in Europe and I heard about pub quizzes, I was like, oh, my God, this is what I was born to do.
Yeah, drinking and quizzing together. That's perfect. Yes. And then you told me the other day that you actually applied, because I revealed to you that Brendan Hunt, we found out, had actually applied to be in the regular contestant pool.
Yes.
In Jeopardy. And I think that was just early this year. And you yourself had applied to be on regular Jeopardy.
Yes, yes. In like, I mean, it's so far back. It's probably like 2000 or so. But when I first moved out here, I remember being like, yeah, I'm going to get on Jeopardy. I remember one day I went down to take the test, and it was my first time experiencing like traffic so bad that I missed it. And I was like so mad. I was like, oh, traffic. And then I remember going and taking the test, and I never got called. So I don't think they told you your score unless they got called. So
No. I need to pull you. I need to pull your test. I gotta figure that out. That producer Alexa, let's pull Ike Barinholtz's test from the early 2000s.
And if you can do me a favor, if it's not a great score, just bury it. Just delete it from the
We'll just forget about it. Thank you. So this was the first ever primetime Celebrity Jeopardy tournament. And obviously you came for a tape day earlier last fall, and you won two games that day. You won your opening round, which was a quarterfinal. You then won your semifinal, which sent you into the final. What was that period like before you were coming back and getting onto the program? Starting to watch the episodes in prime time, and starting to try and figure out, what was that period like?
It was definitely consuming a lot of my mental space, I would say, that few month interim. You know, I watch the show every night, but when I'm not in that period, I watch it much more casually. You know what I mean? I don't hold my little click pen in my hand, so I practice ringing in. During that time, though, every night, it's like working out. It's like watching the show, ringing in, testing, and then watching the Celebrity Jeopardies. And really, I think a big part of it, too, is watching all of the episodes of Celebrity Jeopardy and kind of learning Mayim's timing a little bit. Because as we know, you know, the system unlocks the second the question is finished asking. So trying to learn her rhythms a little bit, I think, was part of it. But I was definitely like thinking about it quite a bit.
Wow. And then which of the other players were you starting to like, fear would be a big word, but starting to like, who was getting your notice on the show?
Well, from the first, when I first signed on to do this, and I kind of saw some of the other names that were in there, I knew immediately that Patton Oswalt was someone that I was incredibly worried about. I've known Patton for a long time. He's like the nicest guy, so like a genius, so funny, so good at this kind of stuff. So I was always like, oh man, I'm worried about him. When I heard Brendan Hunt was going to be on there, I've known Brendan. We went to Amsterdam together. We were performing there for 2 years. I know he is a freak when it comes to this stuff. So that was another name I was worried about. And I was worried about Andy Richter, former Celebrity Jeopardy champion. Just got a mind for this. So those were the three folks I was, I guess, worried about when I first saw the names.
And BJ, you'd mentioned to me BJ as well.
BJ is one of my smartest friends, just incredibly quick mind. And so, yeah, there was quite a few threats out there. And so then watching the game between, you know, Brendan and Patton, I was just like, oh man, it's going to be one of these two guys, and either one of them is going to be just a killer. And that was just such a great game. Oh my God, what a game.
I love Jeopardy social. I really enjoy Jeopardy Twitter. One of my favorite accounts is one eclectic mom, Lily, who analyzes the fashion choices of everybody in Jeopardy world. Her comment about the show, wow, the celebrity contestants are making my account obsolete by recapping their own outfits in their anecdotes. And then in parentheses, all three look fantastic. You wore a sweater. This became a little point of contention with Patton, who was wearing a three-piece suit and felt like he'd actually dressed up for the occasion.
Yes. Well, my I have to shout out Abby Arad at Your Stylist Says. She picks wonderful little outfits. And Patton showed up in a three-piece suit. And I was like, oh, my God. This is like the nicest suit I've ever seen. And so we were talking about it backstage. And then I think Mayim threw it out there. And it was just nice to kind of get some digs at each other while we're out there. When you can kind of make fun of each other a little bit when you're up there, it alleviates the pressure a little bit. So that was very, very fun.
You got out to an early lead. That was probably settling for you. But then Patton comes back, double jeopardy, to massive true daily doubles that get him back into the lead. What is going on in your mind as suddenly, do you feel like you're losing control or do you still feel like you're in control of the game?
I guess it still felt like I was in control. I was very happy that he did that. You know, I was lucky enough to, a friend of mine was friends with a guy named Andy Wood, who was a past Jeopardy winner. Him and my brother, who's never been on Jeopardy, but just loves the show, is very good at it. He's an actor on American Auto, John Bernthal. Both of them, after my first two games, they were like, hey, you need to get more aggressive on your daily doubles. Like, you need to, like, really have confidence in yourself. So, again, before the show, we were kind of talking about that, and I was like, we should just go big on our daily doubles. And then so when we were up there, we were kind of pushing each other, you know, do it, do it, do it. And then it was just so much fun when you get, I think we had three or four true daily doubles in a row, maybe. It was.
Yeah.
So anyways, to your question, I was happy that he did that. And I was just like, okay, we got a game. Got to kick it into overdrive now. So I was just really going on adrenaline at that point.
Yeah. So as you said, you came into triple jeopardy, took a page out of Patton's book. You bet it all on the first daily double in triple, got it right. And then Patton comes up with his own $13,000 daily double to close the gap. And at the end of triple, you're at $50,000, but Patton, not a runaway. Amazing with that total, not a runaway. Patton's in striking distance with $36,000 before we go into final. Do you remember what you were thinking before we went into Final Jeopardy?
Yeah, you know, I first thought is it's all about whether or not I know the answer. You know, like he's close enough where if I get it wrong, he's going to win. I did a little quick math. You know, I had a lot of different people kind of say to me, like someone was like, man, you put your bid in $1 over. That's such a, you know, like a, you know, talking smack. I love it. And then someone else was like, that's so cool that you did that. It's so nice that you put your bid in $1 over. So anyways, so I try to figure out the bidding in case I won. And so I see the categories artist, which I'm like pretty confident at, but not super confident at. It's not like it's, you know, 80s action comedies, which I'm like, okay, I got that. So I artists, and then the clue comes, and Michael, I'm not kidding. When that clue drops, I do not know the answer. I don't.
Well, despite how he's known, he was probably actually born in Anciano near Florence. That was the clue.
I hear Anciano, and I'm focused on that. And I'm like, what is Anciano? What is Anciano? I don't know Anciano. And so I just kind of try to broaden out a little bit. And when I think of painters in Florence, I think of Leonardo. He's the man. He's a great Ninja Turtle. But that one makes the most sense. And so I plop it on down there. And then when you think about it, when you think, Da Vinci. Yeah, that was one that I luckily, I just kind of took a bit of a stab at it. I was just like, if I get this right, I think I'll win. But if not, it's going
to
be over.
I hold in my hand the, I'm showing it to you right now on the Zoom, the box score from last night. I'm actually going to frame this and send this to you. Pretty impressive stuff. You ended up with 41 clues answered correctly in that show versus 27 for Patton, 20 for Will. A really competitive show. 41 clues.
I'll take it.
I mean, of course, you know, Triple Jeopardy exists in Celebrity. That was a really impressive performance. And $1 million for your charity, Pacific Clinics.
Wow.
Tell me about how they reacted when you called them.
Oh, my gosh. A lot of tears. They had a little viewing party there last night at the Holly Grove campus. And so, you know, they are, it's a small organization. It's when people in this community are just having nowhere to go, they just walk into Holly Grove and they will get help. And, so yeah, they are just over the moon. They just cannot believe it. And they just, it's, the woman who I talk to a lot there, she's a huge fan of Jeopardy. So when I kind of told her this was happening 5 months ago, she was like, oh, that's so great. Even if you don't win, it's so exciting. So when I called her and, you know, we talked, she was just, there was a lot of tears. It was a very wonderful phone call. And I'm just so happy for them and so grateful to you guys for giving me the chance to play and for helping out this organization. Like, it just, it does so much good. And it's just, this amount is just a game changer.
Oh, the gratitude goes both ways. Like, we are so grateful to you also. On social, across Reddit and Twitter and Instagram, I pulled a few comments. I've got two words for this game: effing awesome. And the word wasn't effing. One of the most fun Jeopardy matches I've ever seen. They all brought it. These scores are honestly incredible. All three gentlemen have exceeded expectations. Bravo for a fun game. Money going to good causes. I'd definitely like to see Ike Barinholtz, aka Barinholtz ! In Learned League, go to the TOC. You got a little busted there.
There you go.
Ike Barinholtz could definitely hold his own on regular Jeopardy. Very knowledgeable and has wagering strategy down to a T. What a beast. Apparently, he's in Learned League too. A lot of people are finding you all over the place. TOC competitor Brian Chang wrote, congrats on a great tournament. I'd love to see Ike Barinholtz invited to the next Jeopardy TOC.
Oh, my goodness. That is
and
wonderful.
I think I can reveal I officially invited you to the next TOC. No celebrity winner of Jeopardy has ever been invited to the TOC. You are the very first who's been invited, and your answer is?
Michael, I very, very, very humbly accept. I am honored. I say very, very humbly because when I get absolutely destroyed, I just remember that I was very humble when I accepted. But yeah, when you told me this, I could not believe it. Like, Celebrity Jeopardy is incredible, but to be up there with some of the real players will be just, I will be freaking out.
There are some pretty good players from this season. Chris Panullo.
Oh, Chris. Chris was amazing. Chris is so, yeah. He's also the opposite of me. He's so just like low key and just kind of unemotional where I'm like, oh, the answer. Oh, wait, give me a second. Like, he has ice water in his veins. So that's very, very frightening.
So you heard it here first. Ike will be returning for Tournament of Champions this fall. I'm a little worried. We've got to talk scheduling because I'm a little worried about your shooting schedule and your writing schedule and everything else you do. We've got to carve out those days.
I told you dinner. I will always make room for two things, dessert and Jeopardy.
We will work that out, Ike. So excited to have you being part of the world of Jeopardy. I know you're a true fan, and I think that means a lot to fans of the show that they know that they had a true fan of Jeopardy wearing the Jeopardy cap, be holding the Jeopardy trophy, and be coming back for the TOC. That means a lot to everybody here and everybody within the Jeopardy community. I'd also say that Ike and I have started speaking about Celebrity Jeopardy for next year. Ike will be returning as champion of Celebrity Jeopardy into next year's Celebrity Jeopardy. Other players from this year's Celebrity Jeopardy will also be returning.
Let's go.
Next year, you want to take on these guys again, I know.
Bring it on, baby. I'm ready.
You sent me a text this morning where everybody wants to see you and Brendan and Patton in a special game against each
rematch.
Other.
Rematch. Hey, after Rocky lost, he went back and fought Apollo, and then he won. So yeah. Let's come on.
Yeah. And also at dinner the other night, you were talking about like helping us find other really great celebrity players
yes.
to go and be on the program. You want the field, you want Celebrity Jeopardy to be as strong as possible.
This should be a thing that we see constantly. They are very funny, very smart celebrities out there that I think would come on that show and not only have a great time, but would be fun and funny and would surprise you, would really surprise you.
Ike Barinholtz, Celebrity Jeopardy 22-23. Inaugural champion, certainly a little more popular, a little bit more respect from your family and friends today. I'm sure our mutual friend Jimmy Kimmel is gonna find some way to make this awful.
Yes, this will be my nightmare in about 2 weeks. So stay tuned. Watch this space here to see how he ruins it.
Congratulations.
Thank Ike. You, my friend. Thank you so much.
What a great interview, Michael. So fun to hear from Ike. And, you know, I learned that he and I have something in common. As two things I also will always make room for are desserts and Jeopardy. So looking forward to welcoming him back on the Alex Trebek stage in the Tournament of Champions. I can't believe it. It's going to
be
great.
Yeah, he is excited about it. He has sent me several messages since telling me that that how badly he's going to be trounced and to go easy on him with the draw. But it's just going to be great to see him. Also, you know, in the event that we're doing Celebrity Jeopardy again, which I'm very hopeful about, you know, he is being so helpful in talking to the celebrity community, trying to find as many great players as possible. We're really looking to try, if we're doing this again, to find the right group of celebrities. And Ike wants to be challenged. You know, I want him back on the show. I want many of our great celebrity players back on the show, but we want them to be challenged by a next generation of celebrities as well.
Well, I can't think of a better ambassador to head that campaign than our champion, Ike Barinholtz. All right, let's answer some viewer questions, Michael.
Yes, Andy asks, can you explain how each answer is viewed by Ken? Does each one pop up on a screen at his lectern? I recall Alex marking off each answer after it was given. Yes, there's been a change,
Sarah. There has been a change. Yes, for years, Alex had the big script. It's still the same script that the writers and producers all have in front of them. And he would use a Crayola crayon because it was quieter as he would X off each of the clues. And so that's why he never loved when people would bounce around, because here he is trying to find where's the category, what's the dollar amount, got to read the clue, cross it off. As if it isn't hard enough to host Jeopardy, Alex mastered that as well. Now, after Alex passed, Ken came as our first guest host, and he used that similar system. And shortly after that, he did a great job, obviously. But as future guest hosts came through, we realized that I was asking a bit too much of them, because there's just so much to try and manage the game. So our team Vista created a system, and now there's a screen and the clue pops up as the contestant selects it. So our host simply has to read the clue in front of them. They have a wider version of the game board as well. But that's how it goes, clue by clue. You are correct, Andy. It has changed. Alex used to cross those out one by one, but we've evolved here at Jeopardy, and I think our hosts will agree it was a good evolution.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Liam asks, I've enjoyed hearing Mayim engaging the celebrity contestants in banter after Final Jeopardy. Love some bants. It's neat to hear their thoughts on the games right after, kind of like post-game interviews. Jeopardy is a sport. Have you given any thought to letting the audio play when Ken and Mayim talk to the contestants after the regular shows, or doing post-game interviews in some other format? Could be a great way to get into the mindset of the contestants even more. Take it away, Sarah.
Well, this is a great question, Liam. Basically, we don't want to have time to hear those talks in the actual game, because we want to save all of that time for gameplay. With Celebrity Jeopardy, with the format, three rounds and final, a little longer time, we had a little more time to put the volume up and hear those conversations.
Yeah, 91 clues per hour versus 61 just in a half hour on regular Jeopardy, which means we have to fly.
But we do feature, we call them our post-game chats or overheard on set. Often at the end of the show, you'll hear Johnny say, want to know what our contestants are discussing after the microphones are turned off? And we put those on our social channels, so look out for them, because whenever there is a good discussion between our contestants, whether it's about final or a clue that none of them can believe they missed or what it's like to be a champion, we're going to feature those on our social channels, and they are really fun to listen to, but we just can't
put
them in the
actual show. There's a whole playlist on YouTube of those, so they exist over there. We really enjoy them, and we certainly do a lot of, Sarah, you do a lot of Winner Circle interviews. We feature a lot of those interviews on here, as we've done today. Well, that's it.
We've done it. We've got through
a lot. I'm very much looking forward to your responses to my Jeopardy conundrum about putting the category on the screen with the clues. Join us next Monday. We're going to see if Mira can lock in win number 3, and maybe further, see if she can book her own trip to the Tournament of Champions. As always, please make sure to subscribe to the podcast, rate us, leave us a comment, share across social, follow us at Jeopardy on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube, on TikTok. Maybe tune in to see where we may be doing a live show, if we can figure it out, sometime around Jeopardy on March 30th. Send us your questions, your responses to my EP conundrum at insidejeopardypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Sarah. Looking resplendent in pink. We will see you all next week.
Bye-bye.